What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Welcome to Strange Familiars. I'm your host, Timothy. I am here with my co-host, Allison. How are you tonight, Allison?
I'm fine. I'm the co-host.
Of course you're the co-host.
This isn't like a president and vice president kind of thing?
What do you mean, president and vice president?
You know, Strange Familiars Enterprise.
Oh, I'm the host and you're the vice host?
Yeah.
How are you tonight, Allison?
I'm fine.
The heat has come back on us and I'm not happy.
That's called summer.
Well, it's not summer yet.
Yeah, but it's June now.
Yeah. On tonight's show, we're going to be talking with Meg. Meg does the Real Chills podcast. I believe that's out of Philadelphia, Allison. Not too far away.
Everybody thinks York is just Philadelphia West anyway.
Yeah, we're not. We're our own thing.
We are west of Philadelphia, though. That's we're just true. Not West Philadelphia born and raised.
No, we are not. Meg has come on not just to promote her podcast, but also to share some of her stories of growing up in a haunted house and some other strange things that have happened to her.
I would like to ask you, is that like a self-identification thing, like if you grow up in a haunted house? Like how many hauntings makes a haunted house? I would say one.
I think that's self-determined.
Yeah.
I think one person might see a ghost and say, oh, no, I just saw a weird thing one time. Another person might see it and say, oh, I live
our house is haunted.
Yeah, I live in a haunted house. And I think both are valid. Both takes are valid.
Did you grow up in a haunted house? Haunted with other stuff.
I don't know I don't know. But I think it's probably haunted now. Whoever lives there.
Most definitely.
Before we talk to Meg, I want to thank our patrons. Thank you, patrons. We could not do Strange Familiars without you.
That is absolutely true.
You make Strange Familiars possible. If you'd like to support the show and get extra content besides, you can become a patron at Patreon. It's patreon.com/strangefamiliars. We have 93 patron episodes right now. We'll be adding two more this month. We add two full episodes every month, at least two, for our patrons. Those are exclusive episodes. You get the 93 we've already done, and you will get two more episodes every month for as long as you remain a patron. I also wanted to mention, we're doing almost ad-free shows for our patrons. So the weekly shows patrons get almost ad-free. What do I mean by almost ad-free? Well, the 90 days to the Perfect Puppy ad is still in there because that's kind of baked into the show. But the patrons don't hear any of the other ads. So if you like that idea of the almost ad-free show, that's another advantage of becoming a patron. It's patreon.com/strangefamiliars. There's different tiers of support there. No matter what tier you choose, you get the extra content and you help support Strange Familiars. Again, patreon.com/strangefamiliars. All right, let's go ahead and hear my conversation with Meg.
I'd like to welcome Meg to the program. How are you doing tonight, Meg?
Hi, I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm excited to get some of your stories. But first, why don't you tell us a little bit about your podcast?
Yeah, absolutely. So I also have a paranormal stories podcast that's called Real Chills. And I am a Philadelphia-based comedian. So we do have people come on and tell their true paranormal stories, but we kind of try to make light of it as best as we can. You know, the stories can still be pretty scary, but we kind of like to poke fun at the scary ghosts and goblins that people interact with. So it's a lot of fun.
Is it a weekly podcast?
It is. Yep. Every Thursday. It's everywhere podcasts are. So, you know, Apple, Spotify, all that good stuff.
Awesome. So, do you have a website?
I use mostly Instagram, so at Real Chills Podcast, and there's a link tree there for everything else.
Awesome. And we'll be fighting for guests from here on out.
Yeah. Well, I can send some your way if they're really cool. I love doing that for other podcasts I've been on. It's always fun.
Absolutely. I think sometimes people think it's old school radio kind of thing and like podcasts are in competition. It's really not. Podcasts are very supportive of each other. Almost to a fault, every podcast, you know, I've had contact with has just been supportive and, you know, acts like cheerleaders for other podcasts. It's a really great community.
I feel that specifically because, like I said, I'm a comedian and I've reached out to both comedy and paranormal podcasts. And I almost feel that more in the paranormal community, which is really awesome.
The paranormal community is, in my experience, extremely supportive. You know, I had bands and stuff before I did a podcast. And, you know, no offense to the underground music world, but give me the paranormal world any day. They're just so kind and supportive and just awesome people. Not that the music people weren't. It's just more love, I think, coming from the paranormal community. My experience has just been wonderful with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you have a number of experiences. Now, you grew up in a haunted house. Is that correct?
Yes.
Was this near Philadelphia?
Yep. So I grew up in the Poconos. So it's like a 2-hour drive from Philly. It's super woodsy. And the house that I grew up in was built in the 1700s. So it's pre-Revolutionary War. And in its time existing, it's been many different things. It's been a summer camp. There used to be a train. So it used to be a place where people would like stay overnight when they were getting the train. And now it's my house. So a lot of people have been through the walls of where I lived. And my mom is very traditional, so not much has changed. We still have the big wooden floors from the giant trees, and all of our doorways are really short. And even it goes down to like the door handles are these like iron latches from the original construction. So it's definitely got that creepy kind of old school vibe going for it.
Yeah, and sounds like it has that liminal component that so many of these places have. You know, it was a place where travelers were staying. You know, that seems to be an element with this stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's right on a lake, too. And I feel like bodies of water is another thing that people bring up sometimes. That's what's weird about all these hauntings that we're going to get into is that I know a lot of paranormal stories are usually, like, very terrifying, but I feel like my family has always had this connection to who we think it is. So we think that the person who's haunting us is the person who built it. His name was Manuel Gonzalez. And like, we'll even like talk to him. We'll be like, come on, Manny, like knock it off or whatever if we're scared. And my mom is like really into history. So she would take us to visit his gravestone. And it was like this really pretty cemetery on this hill with just like flowers and mountains. So just like a really nice, peaceful atmosphere. So do you want me to get into my first scary story?
Yeah. So about how old were you when you started noticing things happening, say? I don't know if they were happening before you were noticing them or not.
Well, this first story, I definitely don't remember, but am a part of. So I was about 3 years old, and I'm a twin, which some people find creepy in itself. But
twins, so yes, I find that very creepy.
Are they identical or fraternal?
Fraternal. Boy and a girl.
Same, yeah. Well, it's me and my sister, but we're fraternal as well. But people still mix us up. So we were in our crib, and it was the middle of the night, and my mom hears me crying over the baby monitor. So she goes into my room, and she's like, oh, like, baby, what's wrong? It's okay. I didn't say a lot of words yet, but I was like, man, there's a man. She's like, a man? Like, where? Like, what did he say? What did he do? And I took her hand and I just started rubbing it on my face. And then I pointed behind her. And that was about the time where she scooped me and my sister up and just like took us into her room and had my dad, of course, search the whole house, and they didn't find anybody.
Wow. From the mouths of babes.
Yeah, I couldn't make that one up. That's
yeah. So do you think that you were suggesting that this man had been touching your face?
I do. Yeah. I didn't really have the words to describe it. So when she's like, what's going, like, what happened? Like, I just took her hand and showed her.
Ooh, that's that gave me chills.
Yeah. Yeah. I know that one is super legit because my mom tries to deny all of this, which is insane. And she hates when my dad tells a story because she's like, you're scaring them. I'm like, it's real. But yeah. So other than that, it's always been little stuff like you check the table for your keys, you start looking everywhere else, and then you look back down and there they are. Another really, really, really interesting experience was when I was probably like 7 or 8, and it was another in the middle of the night experience where I woke up like just immediately, like opened my eyes, and I saw this, like, this is the one that sounds the craziest. It was like this mist, like just like a blob, not very tall. And it just looked like mist. And I reached out and I actually could feel it. Like it was wet, but it was also kind of like electric-y. And I honestly, I wasn't scared because I think I had just woken up. Like, I think if I had seen it in the middle of the day, like appear in front of me, it would have been a much different experience. But I kind of just reached out and touched it and I smiled a little bit. And as I was touching it, it was kind of, it faded away. And then I just went back to sleep.
Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know how many people you've talked to and whether you've started to check off these things that happen again and again, but that's a thing, going back to sleep after seeing something by your bedside.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we started noticing. Actually, I noticed it in my own experience with the quote-unquote aliens. I don't think they're aliens. I have to sort of give this caveat every time I mention it. But sure. I woke up and they were right by my bedside, and I just went back to sleep. There's no way, no how I should have been that comfortable to go back to sleep. And in fact, I was very angry. And I just kept going back to sleep, and I talked about it, and I've had a number of witnesses on since who just said, yeah, it was really weird. I woke up, there was a giant bunny man in my room, you know, with like glowing red eyes, and I just turned over and went back to sleep. Or, you know, there's a shadow person in my room, whatever it was. You know, we've just had a number of these stories where people just, for whatever reason, there's no reason to go back to sleep, but it happens.
That is so interesting. So you think it's something that they're doing, like the things we're experiencing has control over that?
Possibly. Like for me personally, I felt like I was being put out because I didn't like, I felt like I was just being like, nope, they're like, you go back to sleep now. I guess I can't speak for other people, but for me personally, yeah, I felt like I was being put out.
That's interesting. It's creating a really funny image of you just trying to fight to stay awake and then being like, nope.
Yeah. They weren't like tapping my forehead, but it was as if
I was picturing.
Yeah, just as if they were like, tip, you're out. So yeah, there's something about these things that is, and I'm really careful when I say this, it's tied to sleep, but it's not dreams. You know, a lot of people, it's very easy to write them off as dreams, but when you talk to people, and I'm sure it's the same with you, like you're pretty sure this mist wasn't a dream, right?
I know. Yeah, I know. Yeah. I'm like 100% certain because I remember it like lulling me. Like, it was very comforting and just, like, going, like, peacefully back to sleep after touch. Like, just, I just shot my hand out to feel it. It was so weird. Your story actually reminds me, I've had one, so I have sleep paralysis as well. Mm-hmm. But it could be because I drink coffee until 11 o'clock at night. You know, I do have some non-paranormal explanations, I feel like, for most of my experiences. But there's one I had, and I've never had an experience like this again at all, which I think actually makes it more credible. I had just moved to Philly and I was kind of in a low point, which I've heard sometimes attracts, you know, like really dark energies. I was like really, I didn't have any friends or family here. I felt really lonely, and it was my first time living completely alone. And I had decided I was going to take a nap on my couch. So I'm napping. I wake up, I get up, and I go to get cereal, and I look at my door, and I'm like, that's weird. My door looks broken. So I walk over to the door, and as I'm fiddling with the handle, I wake up again.
Ooh.
And I'm like, oh no, okay. So that was a dream. That was weird. But I do kind of want cereal. So I went and I got cereal. Then I was like, hey, wait a minute. The door is messed up. I go over the door again and I wake up again.
Mm.
So now I'm like, okay, this time, like the third time I wake up, I'm like, all right, I'm asleep right now. There's no way I'm awake right now. And I just start like fighting as hard as I can to pull myself awake. And as I start doing that, from the other room, I hear a man's voice yelling, and he's just like, help me, like somebody help me. And I'm ignoring it. At this point, I'm praying. I'm like trying anything to get awake. And finally, I'm like, okay, I can't ignore this guy anymore. And I'm like, what do you want? And in the scariest voice, he goes, you. And then I wake up, like just shoot up. Ooh. And I look at my phone, and I wake up a minute before my alarm was supposed to go off.
Yeah. So sleep paralysis is often used as an explanation for paranormal stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, that's just my personal feelings. I think that's kind of confusing the keyhole for the doorway.
Mm.
I really think there's more to it. The number of people, just general paranormal witnesses, whether it's, you know, the stuff we call bedroom invaders or nighttime invaders, these entities that just appear in people's rooms while they're sleeping and stuff, whether it's those or even just like Sasquatch witnesses, you know, that I regularly ask, do you or have you ever had sleep paralysis? The number of paranormal witnesses who say, oh yeah, yeah, I've had that is extremely high, in the range of 80 to 90%.
Wow. That's so interesting. I really see, that's what's interesting about this, just like the paranormal world, is there's so much to research. Like, I would love to see someone doing the research, like the correlation between paranormal experiences and sleep paralysis.
Yeah.
And what that means, because it sounds like I might be like inferring something, but are you saying that like people with sleep paralysis have like a closer connection to the other side? Is that what you're saying? Like with
I mean, you know, what the connection means, I don't know, but it seems like sleep paralysis and paranormal encounters outside of sleep paralysis encounters go hand in hand, which make me wonder that some of these sleep paralysis accounts where people are seeing entities and they're like, no, it was sleep paralysis, but there was an entity there. It makes me wonder if there isn't something more than just hypnagogia or hypnopompia or whatever they chalk it up to.
Well, I'm interested to hear if you've ever heard of this. So I've had a few sleep paralysis people on my podcast, and recently, in the last two or three, they've been talking about sleep paralysis demons, but they've also been describing like a vibration, almost like a humming,
mm-hmm.
that they're hearing during these experiences. Have you gotten that? I have never heard that before. And then like, I feel like it's two or three back to back. Not only did they describe sleep paralysis, but like also like this vibrating sensation.
The, you know, kind of hum or vibrating thing, that mm-hmm. that's paranormal encounters across the board. You'll get that with Bigfoot encounters, UFO encounters, sometimes with hauntings and sleep paralysis. Yeah, that's like another thing that for me, that's like, yeah, there's something about sleep paralysis that's like,
ugh.
You know, maybe it's that between dream and, you know, the reality experience or something. And you know, part of me wonders if the other, capital other, is what I call this collective group of paranormal things that are out there.
Sure.
That if the other doesn't somehow use dreams in a way, because mm-hmm. we've had, you know, me and some of my investigation partners and stuff have had some very powerful and very meaningful dreams in the wake of paranormal investigations that seem to be big dreams, as they say, you know, meaningful, really big dreams, as opposed to just sort of like, you know, processing the day's activities or whatever.
Yeah. I also had one person who described having sleep paralysis since she was a little girl, talking about how she feared it so much, and she always would like run away from it. And how she did one episode with me and came back because she had this like epiphany. Her mom passed away, unfortunately, kind of recently. And instead of like running away, she sort of started facing like the familial trauma she had, which this is a lot. I didn't tell you about all this stuff. I'm sorry. I'm throwing this.
This is interesting to me.
And she was like, the second I opened myself up to working on my familial, you know, over generations of trauma, the fear went away and it almost felt like he was like a guide. He no longer appeared to be this dark, scary image. It was an image. She was more like, he was wearing purple, and it almost seemed like the more she embraced and tried to work to fix that trauma, the less scary and more meaningful these sleep paralysis dreams became.
So I've had several people reach out to me in terms of these quote unquote abduction experiences and tell me it's a shamanic process, right? So this is something you need to go through and come back out the other side. And I believe them that they've sort of submitted themselves to the experience, and you know, they feel they've come out better on the other end. It sounds like that's what your guest was doing in a way, kind of working through it and embracing the experience. For me, I'm such a stubborn person that I just like, and I've always been like, why do I have to submit to you? You
know? Yeah, like, sure. Like, I'm just okay. Like,
yeah. Why do I have to do that?
Totally. I also think there's something to making your intentions like and focusing your energy on what you want when it comes to the paranormal. Like, I agree with you where I do feel like they have to listen. I don't know if it's because we're alive and our energy might be a little bit more stronger than theirs, but that kind of that leads me to one of my last stories for at least my haunted house. This story takes place when I was in college. I was home for the summer. It was really late. I was on college kid hours, so everyone else was asleep. It was probably like 3 a.m. And the way my living room works, I was laying on my couch watching the TV, but you can look into my dining room from the living room. Mm-hmm. And it had just been my little brother's birthday, so all that was left of the party was one shiny metallic happy birthday balloon, not moving at all, no AC, no windows open. For whatever reason, I don't know what compelled me to look over. I look over at this balloon and it slowly starts rotating, really slowly. It's not like wobbling or anything. It's turning in like a circle. And like what we're talking about, I remember reading that if you make your intentions known, if you like straight out say what, like set a boundary, that sometimes they'll listen. So I'm like, no, thank you. Like, don't do that, please. Out loud to no one, to just this balloon. I'm like, please don't. And the second I say that, it stops moving. It turns back to the position it was originally in and just stops moving altogether.
Once again, I've had a number of witnesses, and you know, sometimes people come to me and they're very troubled. And you know, before pointing them to an exorcist or whatever, the first thing I recommend doing is ask it to stop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just ask it to stop. It's incredibly effective. I don't know why. Yeah. And yes. And you're right. You know, maybe prayer is just a more focused way, or just another way of focusing that intention like that. And, you know, maybe it just boils down to that. But yeah, I've had a number of people say, you know, like, yeah, I don't know what to do. This is really scaring my kids and stuff. And I just like, just ask in a very firm, but, you know, not rude way. Just ask it to stop.
And so, most times it will. Yeah. If you do that.
Yeah.
Also, to your point about religions, I have an episode coming out in 2 weeks. So this is kind of, I mean, depending on when you air it, it's never heard info from Real Chills. But I had someone on who was doing research on, I guess, different religions. She didn't really specify, but she ended up going to North Carolina and staying with, it's basically like a tribe, like an African. They're in North Carolina, but they practice a bunch of like African rituals. And she was saying how when slaves came over and they were being taught Christianity, they're like, this is God, this is Mary, this is this saint. And all of the slaves already had names for those types of events. They're like, oh, that's this in our language, or that's this. Mm-hmm. So even though, you know, they're so obviously culturally different, they already had the same, for lack of a better word, paranormal like icons, that just different names. So I think when you're praying, it doesn't matter. Like these things are showing themselves to us, and it might be Mary or it might be whatever name you pick in another religion. Mm-hmm. So they're going to, I guess, follow those rules, right?
I mean, archetypes are huge with this stuff too. So maybe it is just a matter of these, you know, Mary represents the goddess archetype, et cetera. You know, this is all above my pay grade. But,
when she was talking to me, I was like, this is wild. This was a lot.
Well, you did mention one more thing in your email about your house that I did want to cover, this, the piano playing by itself.
Yes. Yeah. So we had a baby grand, and this story is actually my sister. She experienced this. So I don't know about your twins, but me and my sister, we're best friends, but we're very different. Mm-hmm. And she's kind of like my mom, where she's like, it's not haunted. You guys are, you know, you get in your head and then you just hear noises. But the one thing she could never explain is one night she woke up and she heard the piano playing downstairs, like a full song, not just little like clinks, like a classical song. And she thought it was our dad, because our dad plays piano, which is weird. It was the middle of the night. But when she went downstairs and looked at the piano, no one was there.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a cool one. It's creepy, but, you know, I guess give me music more than howls and banging on the window.
Yeah, all the haunts, as you can see, were very, like, chill, I feel like. I don't feel like they're trying to, like, kick us out or anything.
Well, you mentioned that you kind of felt like you've never been, like, super afraid of this or anything. Is that because of the nature of these have been like that, like those kind of experiences? Or do you think there's something else?
It's hard to put into words, because I've just always felt like connected to the house. My whole family, I think, does. Like, my mom will never leave that house. And I don't know what the connection is. Like, I couldn't verbalize it, but I just, it almost feels like we have an understanding or like a contract with each other. Like, we're going to respect the space. We're not going to change too much about it. And hopefully that means you'll respect us and not mess with us too much in our daily lives. And I think when my friends come over, they get really scared. Like one time, my favorite story is for Halloween, a little kid came up and took candy, and my mom heard him saying to his mom, I thought it was scarier without the decorations. So people are scared of it. But for me, it's just always been like a real, I think there's just an agreement between us.
And I mean, you know, like I say, you have to live there, you know, when you're growing up, at least. You got to go to sleep at some point. So, you know, a lot of people have said, like, well, why didn't you just move? Well, sometimes it's not that simple.
No.
And you got to sleep sometimes. So, you know, I think some people learn to live with it one way or another, you know.
Oh, and we always slept with, like, the TV on or, like, a radio on or something, because we were scared of all the little creaks and noises.
Does your mom still experience things?
She definitely does. She, now that I have the podcast, she's less inclined to tell me about them. Because she's like, no one is going to visit us. Your family and your friends are already scared. But one thing she, it was another dream. She had a dream she was in the house, but it was like colonial, like the 1700s. And there was a group of people there. And I was like, did you talk to them? She's like, I don't remember. And I'm like, you're not telling me the whole story. So she definitely still experiences my little brother that lives there still experiences things. Like recently we have this one room that has like waist high, there's some mirrors. It's like a little workout room or something. And my brother was doing work there and he looked up at the mirror and saw half of like a figure in the mirror and looked down before realizing, oh, I'm alone. And when he looked back up, it was just gone.
Mm, yeah.
So lots of little stuff like that, you know, when you add it up, it feels a lot bigger.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So have you had paranormal experiences outside of this house?
I have. Yeah. There's one really sweet one where I had my cousin pass away kind of suddenly. It was super unexpected. and our whole family was taking it really hard. We were really close. So at his funeral, he used to work at a hotel. So we stayed at that hotel. And the soap that they use there is the same as my last name. It's Getz Soap. I don't know if you've seen it. It's kind of fancy. And they were like, oh, your last name's Getz. That's so cool. So they just gave me a free bottle of it. It was like hand soap.
Mm-hmm. And, if it's fancy, I can almost guarantee you I've not seen it.
It's, I feel like it's like really great. Like it's one of those new ethical companies. At mm-hmm. least that's what I think. And so anyway, we get the soap, whatever. We do the celebration. Everything's really emotional and nice. And my cousin was always like a prankster. Like he used to drive us to chorus. And of course we have these creepy woodsy roads. So he would pretend the car broke down and like roll down the windows and be like, oh no, we're stuck, you know, which is terrifying when you're 13. But now it's just like a really funny thing to look back on. So he was always a prankster. And we get home and I start fighting to open this bottle. I'm like messing with it. I'm pulling as hard as I can. I'm spinning the top because it's like one of those ones where you twist it and then it pops up.
Yeah, I hate this.
They're so annoying. I'm doing everything I can. I'm like, whatever. When I shower or whatever, I'll fight with it again. So I just put it down and I'm like, you know, I need a breather because it's frustrating me. And then when I get in the shower, I start messing with it again. I start pulling it. I start twisting it. I'm doing everything I can. And then I just stop and I'm like, Brian, if you're messing with me, can you stop? And after I thought that, without me touching it, it pops open.
So you were being pranked.
I had one last prank from Brian. The thing that makes me really believe like that that's what was happening is that I didn't touch it again. Like it just opened. And it was kind of what like I think I needed because I don't know. It was such a sudden thing. It's been years now and it's still like kind of, it still sucks, you know?
Mm-hmm,
and
sure. Yeah.
It just makes me think that like if he is on the other side, like he's happy and he's still messing with us, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We had some paranormal investigators on my show who said that they one time did an EVP session and they got the voice of one of their friends who was still alive. And they were like, maybe it's astral project. Like it gets, I feel like what I feel is there's like a veil. And then after that, it gets really complicated on what's there's just a lot happening, you know?
Yeah. So the other can definitely, you know, it's a great mimic. It can sound like pretty much anything at once, it seems. Mm-hmm. From, you know, we get in the woods, we get crying babies sometimes and women screaming and car door slamming. I've actually recorded in the middle of the woods, 3 miles from anything. And I'd heard it before. John Keel, you know, way back in the 70s said it was crying babies and car door slamming were the two, you know, most reported unusual sounds, unexplained sounds in paranormal events. And I'd heard the car door slamming before. I didn't have my recorder running. I never thought I'd catch it. And we were out, again, 3 miles from anything, just way out in the middle of the woods. We had gotten a Bigfoot account there. And we were just kind of looking around and right as it's getting dark, beginning of dusk, we just hear this car door slamming. And there's no mistaking it. And there's,
like multiple times?
No, just once.
Just once.
Just a heavy car door slam. And, you know, my friend's looking at me and we were by a river. We went out to the river to make sure that there weren't any boats next to us or anything. There's no parking lot anywhere near us. There's no road anywhere near us. It is distinctly the sound of a car door, and I actually recorded it. I don't know if anyone has ever recorded the paranormal car door slam. Lots of people talked about it, but I got it.
The one and only.
Well, yeah. I don't know. I don't know if it's the only, but I heard people talk about it. I actually captured it. And it sounds like a car door slamming, you know?
Did you investigate, or were you like, did you go to sleep and be up time for bed?
I mean, we were in the middle of the woods. We still had to hike out 3 miles. So,
Was this middle? Okay, so I don't know why I was picturing this at night. This was in the middle of the daytime.
It was getting dusk. It was just about
okay.
You know, the woods were getting dark at this point.
Great.
Yeah, we heard this, and you know, what do you do? It's just a weird sound.
I don't go towards it. That's the same thing. I have this joke about how like if I ever saw like a kid crawling out of a cornfield or something, I'm not helping. Like, the same with like a crying baby, like, oh, well, hopefully some like wolves find it and raise it as their own, because I'm not going in there.
It's such a creepy thing. Like, the crying baby thing, it's so creepy because as humans, we're programmed to respond to that.
Yeah.
And to want to help that, right? That's a sound. That's another human in distress. And a, you know, a baby, a helpless human in distress. And the fact that it uses that sound, it, to me, is one of the creepiest things. You get a lot with Sasquatch encounters. It's like, what is that trying to do? Are you trying to lure people out in the woods, and for what reason?
That's so unsettling. Yeah. Have you heard of the documentary Missing 411?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, it's that's what it's reminding me of, how there's all of these missing kid cases, or like they notice that most of the people that are missing have disabilities of some sort or are like toddlers. And when they, if they are found, when they're found, they're so far away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, we've done a couple like older cases. I don't do too much true crime because it's just, it's brutal.
I don't either.
It's, and I try not to do modern cases where the families are still alive and so forth.
Oh, but absolutely.
We've done some like older cases that kind of fit that missing 411 mold of just kids in Pennsylvania in the, you know, like 1902 or something.
Right.
That just disappeared. In one of the cases, she was found, I think, 3 days later, and they said they suspected that she was taken by, you know, with a wild man, was what they called it back then. I think this was in the late 1800s. That's what basically what they called Bigfoot, but also scary homeless guys, you know.
Right.
anything like that would be called a wild
all
man.
All of the above. Yeah.
So, but they said there was a wild man or a wild woman prowling around the neighborhood, and they thought she was taken by that, and they weren't clear as to, you know, what they meant by wild man or wild woman. But she was found unharmed, like three days later. I think she lived to be like 70 or 80 or something, you know, nice long life. There was another girl we did where she was found, and she was 2 years old. She went missing, and they looked everywhere for her. And, mm-hmm. and this was up above Redding in Berks County. And we actually went to the area and saw where she lived and saw the cornfield where she was found. Eventually, she, you know, she was found dead a few, but they had searched all through that cornfield.
Right. That's the other thing. Sometimes they find things in places they definitely searched.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very, very strange. And, you know, I'm leaning into the whole, you know, missing 411 aspect of it. And my wife is like, nah, we'll figure out who did this. We'll find the killer. You know, she's determined that eventually we'll crack the case.
I was like 50-50. I felt like there were some cases they had where I was like, I don't know. I have a lot of questions. And then others, I was like, I have no idea how to explain how a child that small could manage something like that. Even,
when they find them like 10 miles away, you know, up a mountain that they said you'd have to be an incredibly skilled mountain climber to scale. And they would have had to do like 3 major creek crossings and stuff to get there. That's when it's just like, wow, like something weird happened here.
It's weird to think, though, because I don't have any reference for this, but I always imagine Bigfoot to be human-like, kind of like not at the point where it would eat people, you know, because I feel like that's what that is inferring, that it may be Bigfoot or another paranormal being like that eats children, right? Hunts them.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess that's sort of the suggestion. And the guy who writes those books, he's very clever, never to say...
Doesn't give you a lot,
what he thinks it
either
is.
Either way.
Because, I mean, for one reason, he's not going to sell any more books at that point.
Right.
You know, if he keeps it open, he can sell it to the Bigfoot people and to the paranormal people and to the, you know, the search and rescue people and et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But, you know, my feelings and, you know, having written multiple books on Bigfoot at this point and spend so much of my life with it. Mm-hmm. That mystery is so complex that we're talking about something that's not so much beyond our comprehension, but thinks in ways that we don't. And right. I think trying to reason with it in the way that we reason out things and the way we would think about things, and even the way natural animals think about things, I think is a little bit difficult, because whatever that phenomenon is, and I don't think it's an ape in the woods. I don't think we're ever going to capture something and put in a cage. Whatever it is, it's either paranormal or it's so weird and so different that it might as well be paranormal.
Oh, man. That makes me think it's way scarier.
Well, it's a very strange thing. It's very unusual, and I don't know that if it's taking people, it's not to eat them. You know, there's something else going on. There's some other kind of weird thing going on.
Something else happening. Yeah.
I think we were. I don't know how old you were, but I know, like, growing up when I did in the 70s and 80s, it was very much we were fed this idea that, like, you know, oh, Bigfoot's just a, you know, it's either a myth or it's a creature we'll put in a cage one day. We'll get them. You know,
right.
And, you know, having studied it, and especially in Pennsylvania, the cases are so weird. They're so weird. It's like there's not a breeding population of these things here. There's no way, no how.
We actually, one of our first shows was a guest from Pennsylvania. Well, they were visiting Pennsylvania, the Poconos, and saw Bigfoot.
Ooh.
And he was young. I think he was like 7. And he said it like peeked around a tree at him. This was a long time for me now. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to remember the details, but he also mentioned it making like a very strange noise, mm-hmm. like a very specific. And then of course they ran to tell their parents, who did not believe them at all. And it kind of like haunted him, kind of, you know, he became a little bit obsessed with researching it. But at the time there weren't as many noted experiences in Pennsylvania. It was more of like at least he was saying it's more like a West Coast thing, I think.
Well, yeah, like when I was growing up, that's the thing. It was like Bigfoot is something that happens on the West Coast. It's not, but then you find out, I mean, the internet really blew things open.
Sure, yeah.
And you find out that no, people are experiencing this everywhere, and not always way out in the middle of the wilderness either. A lot of times, you know, it'll be in, you know, neighborhoods with a little bit of woods.
Right.
You know, some of our most intense experiences, you know, we've had some pretty intense ones in state forests, like way out from the middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. But some of the weirder, more intense things have been in little parks that are right up against people's houses where people have said, you know, hey, I've seen something here, and we'll go and check it out. And we've had some really intense experiences, and you can like see the lights from houses still. We're not that far away from houses.
Yeah. And like you were saying, I believe him. The way he talks about it, he's not unsure and he's not making it up.
Yeah. Even like I said, even my wife, the skeptic, she has turned from, you know, you're all crazy, to having gone to some of these conventions and stuff with me, and witnesses will come up and regularly talk to me. They'll come up and they'll see my books or something with Bigfoot on the cover, and I can tell when I'm going to get a story, because they'll, if there's a bunch of people at the table, they'll stand back and they'll just wait.
They'll
like shuffle their feet, and they'll wait till everybody goes. And then they'll come up and then they'll tell me their story.
That's so cool.
My wife has said, you know, more than once, like these people have told their story, and she's looked at me and said, okay, I don't know what he saw, but he saw something. Like,
you know,
and that's what I call like honest skepticism. Like that, I'll accept that. Like, okay, you're not going to go all the way to it being Bigfoot, but you're going to admit that he at least saw something that affected him very deeply. I'll take that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Do you still go out there?
Oh, yeah. Oh, all the time. Yeah.
You're not scared?
I'm terrified.
Okay. Well, just checking, because you sound like that's the thing. I was invited to like go like paranormal investigate, and I might do it, but like for me, my experiences are different because I've never had to seek it out, right? It's just been in front of my face my whole life since it's not paranormal to me. It's just kind of like, yeah, this happens, man. You can't explain everything that you see. Doesn't every person grow up with that mindset? So the thought of, because like for me, I feel very comfortable with the interactions I've had. The thought of going out and seeking interactions with something I don't understand in the same way is like, it's so terrifying to me.
Yeah. And I should adjust that. So it can get very scary, and some measure you're going to get out of it what you bring to it. And I've noticed this, and it's been true. I used to go out in a very kind of, I don't know, like not exactly fearful, but sort of expecting to be afraid. Let's say that.
Right.
Expect. Mm-hmm. And the experiences tended to be more intense and more negative and so forth. And at some point, there's an Irish monk that comes on the show pretty often, Brother Richard. And we were talking about that. And he really kind of put me at ease in dealing with this, a lot of it. And now it gets scary, like it does out there. I mean, you're in the dark, you're in the middle of the woods.
Yeah.
It gets scary, but it's not, it's different than it used to be. Like there's, it's not a kind of panic kind of scared. It's like a super aware kind of scared.
Alert.
Yeah. Where you're just like, okay, something not normal is happening here. And, you know, kind of keeps you on your toes. So yeah. And it's also my job, you know, like at this point is my job. So I got to do it. There's a certain place in Michaux Forest, this kind of ruins that we were investigating, and had a really intense night there. And as we were leaving, Chad, my investigation partner, says, "Do you want to come back?" And I was like, it doesn't matter if I want to or not. It's like, we have to. Like we have to come back. We can't just leave it lay.
That's awesome. It's so cool that you still do it.
Oh, yeah. I love it. It's addictive. It's so addictive.
Yeah.
I almost feel bad because I kind of introduced Chad to it. He was an experiencer. He had gotten screamed at by something in the woods at a very strange day.
Thank you.
And kind of got him interested after I like to go. Like, so if a witness calls me and they say, you know, I experienced this here, if I can get to that place, I like to meet the witness there and like record the story where it happened. I really like doing that. And that's what I did with Chad. And then after that, I got him hooked on this, and he's as addicted as I am. I mean, every weekend it's like, where are we going this weekend? it's such an addictive thing. It's very seductive. All of this, it's an incredible feeling. I was never addicted to drugs, but I can only imagine it's something similar.
Yeah. If you try. Yeah. Yeah. I think what you're saying too, like being afraid and then getting less afraid, like it goes back to telling it to stop or not. I think you can also put out I'm here signals too. Like, you know, instead of just like nothing, you can also put out signals that are like, I'm looking for something.
Oh, sure.
So I think the more that you engage, like the paranormal investigators are like, oh yeah, we do EVPs in our house every day. I'm like, that is wild to me.
Yeah.
Because, you know, this is your house. Like, but, you know, they feel very in control and they do it every day and they're open to whoever wants to talk, but they also like have boundaries. So I think what becomes addicting is that the more you do it, the more open you become and the more you experience, which is mm-hmm. really cool.
Yeah. There's more out there than, I mean, in my experience, there just is, you know, there's something right. more out there than, you know, the mundane. And I found that even people who say, well, I've never experienced anything, if you get them talking long enough, I'll be like, well, yeah, this, I've never experienced anything, but I was coming home one night and there was these, you know, this UFO in the sky. This kind of followed my car for 10 miles. Like, okay, wait a minute. So you have experienced something.
So you have. Yeah. That's my favorite. I wear this hat. So I have this hat that just says Bigfoot is real. And I love wearing it everywhere because I'm not really good at small talk, but I will talk about the paranormal forever. And it really has just encouraged, first of all, every weirdo in the world to approach me and talk to me, which I love. Tell me the stories. It's all I want. That's why I started the podcast. But then also, like, skeptics are like, do you really believe in Bigfoot? And I'm like, yeah, I think there's something there, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And then it just, like you said, like, it opens up into this, well, I had this. And I'm like, see?
Yeah, yeah. I'm not going to say everybody has something, but a lot more people than are willing to talk about it have had something happen.
I think people know the difference between, like, just what is a dream. Like, this is such a specific, descriptive experience. I don't know. I guess also because of my podcast, I'm more willing to believe there's something there.
That's me, too. I start out willing to believe. That's just my nature.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, people are like, oh, aren't you afraid people are lying to you? I'm like, well, you know, first of all, a lot of people don't really have too many reasons to lie about this stuff. Like, why would they? It's not, you know, people suggest, oh, they're just looking to be famous. Well, then why do like 50% of them want to change their name? You know?
Yeah. Most people are like, you're going to tell me I'm crazy.
Right. Yeah, before exactly. That's the number one reason. If they want to change their name, the number one reason they give is like, oh, I don't want people to think I'm crazy.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah. There's no money in it. There's no reason to be famous for this stuff. It's really, I found this, most people just, they hear someone else tell a story that's similar and they think, oh my gosh, somebody else has experienced this too. I'm going to share mine now. And just, it's like a sense of community in a sense.
Absolutely. That's why I like doing my podcast too, is just like, it's nice. We have so many different experiences. It's not just ghosts or aliens. And more often than not, there are other people out there who've had shared an experience like that, which is so mind blowing to me.
The weirdest thing, people will tell me the weirdest things. And I will say, someone out there will contact me and say they've experienced this too.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens all the time. Like, we've been getting a number of disembodied leg stories where people are just seeing like a pair of legs walking down the street.
I just had a story where my friend's wife, who's on the podcast, was she came into the kitchen and all she saw was just like a pair of pants next to the table, just like legs.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just like disappeared. Yeah. Like, I just heard, and I've never heard that before, ever.
Oh, we've gotten a number of these stories. We've gotten like hairy legs, you know, potentially Bigfoot legs. I don't know. Like, we've gotten like legs in shorts, you know, just look like just some dude in running shorts, but just legs down. We've gotten pants, jeans. They said it looked like jeans. So weird. Like, what a weird thing that is.
That wouldn't be too bad to me, though, because it's like, what do you even do? Like, you're like, all right, well.
Yeah. I mean, what's he going to do? Come over and kick me?
Yeah. Like, it's like, it loses a lot of the scare factor when I can't see you emote, I guess. Like,
yeah. Yeah. But it is a strange thing. And a number of people have seen this, you know, like all over the place. People are like, yeah, that's all that. I'm very agnostic. I don't put a lot of definitions on it. I will say, like, I feel like it's all connected. How it's connected, why it's connected, I don't know. I can just tell you, like, there's strange lights involved across the phenomenon. Ghosts, Bigfoot, UFOs. There's poltergeist activity involved across the phenomenon with all three. And there's enough relation to dreams and death, honestly, across that, where it seems like how it's all related. Again, I don't know, but it really feels like it's all manifesting part of something, you know, one thing. And a friend of mine had an idea that I kind of like to bring out every now and then. He says it's like if you imagine a video game and they just reskin some of the characters in it.
Yeah, like, that's what it feels like. Yeah,
like sometimes it's for you, maybe it's being skinned as a ghost. For the next person, they might skin it as a gray alien. Next person, maybe they'll skin it as a Bigfoot, you know. And it might be reaching into your mind and saying, like, okay, what is this person, depending on what reaction it's looking for, whether it's fear or perhaps trying to get a message across of some sort or whatever, what is this person going to respond to? And it might be like literally reaching in and going, okay, this person, you know, has these experiences. They are going to respond more to this. And then giving you, in a sense, what will get the reaction out of you that it desires.
I've heard that sort of as an explanation for like the different cultural cryptids.
Mm-hmm.
So like, you know, you grow up hearing about Bigfoot. So these things are like, okay, I can show them a Bigfoot and they'll know. You know, mm-hmm. Whereas like, you know, in Loch Ness, they're like, oh, I'll be Nessie. Or like in, you know, Europe, they'll be like, fairies are a huge thing in Europe. And it's like, it's the same energy, or like what you're kind of saying, like just projecting whatever our understanding of it is. Like, it's like, you can't comprehend this. So here is something paranormal that your brain can at least put together a little bit.
The way, so I look at a lot of comparative folklore, so I look at, you know, folklore from all over the world, and the way they describe, for instance, nature spirits, what they would call earth whites in the Germanic Norse tradition, they act a whole lot like Bigfoot, you know?
Yeah. And
they're not always describing something big and hairy, although sometimes they are, but the way they act is so similar. You know, and it's really, really interesting. Down to the, like, weird details I found. Like, they'll talk about things climbing on roofs. that's an odd thing to read in like these Norse folk tales, like these trolls or whatever, like climbing on people's roofs and walking around mm-hmm. on their roof. And then you hear modern Bigfoot witnesses with no knowledge of this folklore say, yeah, you know, I live in a trailer and it climbs up on my roof.
I hate that. That's one I have never heard. I don't know. Like, I feel like the more we talk, the more I'm like, Bigfoot is a nightmare. Like, I don't know.
It's creepy. You should come out to York County and we'll take you to we'll take you on Bigfoot.
Okay, maybe once in the daytime, if that's what you guys are doing. Because I don't know why I've always just, I guess because that's how kind of you're taught, is like Bigfoot's like a silly, non-existent thing. And then I slowly started believing in it and talking to people and their experiences. I don't know if you know Ryan Singer, but he has a really intense Bigfoot story. But I was still kind of on the fence. I was like, okay, he's probably not that bad. But after this conversation, I'm like, no, he's...
Oh, it's
evil.
It's so... The thing is so interesting.
When I was talking to Ryan, he was talking about how he suspects it may be able to control electronics. I don't know if you've ever had that experience. Because his experience was like on a well-lit filmed area. And the footage was corrupted. They weren't able to pull any of the footage. And a lot of the times with these experiences, I don't know if you've had this because you've actually been out there. So I'm just going off of stories I've heard. The evidence is sort of not the best, you know, like they don't ever get like a full body Bigfoot or
right
or anything like that. And
I can show you a photo I took. It's, you know, what people would call blob squatch.
yeah.
In general, I don't think we're allowed to take photos of this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. There's something.
But audio is okay. Audio is perfectly fine.
Because no one believes audio for some reason. If you can't see it with
perhaps,
your eyes.
Perhaps. But okay. All of my listeners have heard my stories a million times.
I'm sorry.
Times. No,
I'm
it's okay. I enjoy the conversation. I just want to make sure we covered all your stories.
Yes, yeah, that's first for now, at least.
Your podcast is called Real Chills, and people can find that wherever they get podcasts.
That is correct, yeah.
And if they want to come to you with stories, where do they reach out?
Yeah, definitely. You can email me. It's just realchillspodcast@gmail.com.
Awesome. Well, we will have to tune in, and you know, if you want to have some fun with my stories, I'd be happy to come on.
Oh my gosh, I would love that.
Thank you, Mick.
Thanks so much.
If someone has a puppy, Allison,
mm-hmm.
and it's mouthing and biting, or they need help with potty training, or fear and nervousness, or if the puppy's barking too much, or chewing on furniture, or shoes, or other things it shouldn't be chewing on, or maybe they need help with crate training, or hyperactivity issues, or leash training, or any number of the other puppy problems that people might have. Do you know where they might go for help?
I do. I know exactly where to go.
Where's that?
90 Days to the Perfect Puppy.
90 Days to the Perfect Puppy can help you with their relationship-based approach. They help you and your puppy become perfect for each other. They have online sources, video lessons, a secret Facebook group. One-on-one options are available. You can find them at sithappens.us. Look for the 90 Days to the Perfect Puppy link at the top of the page. Let 90 Days to the Perfect Puppy help you understand how your dog thinks and apply proactive training methods so you and your puppy can become
perfect for one another.
And you can find them where, Allison?
sithappens.us.
That's right. Look for the 90 Days to the Perfect Puppy link at the top of the page. Back to a photo for the curiosity of the week. Well, I guess we had photos last week of the hermit priest.
We have photos till the end of time.
I know. She looks like a good witch from The Wizard of Oz.
She does, actually. It's a pretty neat, cool costume she has on. I don't know if she's supposed to be.
She's a wizardess.
She is. She's named as well.
I'm going to guess this is from, what, the 1930s, maybe?
Yeah, I think so.
She's wearing a white gown. She looks like I said, like one of the good witches from The Wizard of Oz. She's this very mystical outfit she's wearing with a pendant of some sort.
I don't know if she's in a play or if she's in a Halloween costume.
She is a wizardess.
Oh, clearly.
Yes.
I mean, it takes one to know one, I guess.
That's obviously what's happening here.
Tucked into that crown is probably 4 feet of white hair.
Exactly. Can you read the name on the back? Mrs.
Whitler?
Ah, Mrs. Whitler. Yes. Mrs. Whitler the wizardess. If you go to the show notes under this episode, you'll see an image of this photograph. If you click on that, it'll take you to our Etsy shop where you can purchase this and other curiosities of the week, including the postcards of last week's Hermit Priest. They're still up there. And some previous curiosities of the week as well. Allison has a good selection of antique photography up there. I have my books. If you get them from us on Etsy, they come signed. Apparitions, illustrations of the other, my art book. Etsy is the only place you can get that. That's not on Amazon. I've tried to get it on Amazon, but I can't crack that egg. I don't know how to do it. So you can get my book of illustrations from us on Etsy. You can get Strange Familiars t-shirts there, both the classic Awoken Tree shirt, and we still have some of the High Strangeness tour shirts as well. I have artwork up there, originals and prints, and much more. Our shop name is Lost Grave, but if you type in Strange Familiars, you should see our stuff come up. If you get stuff from our Etsy shop, it also helps support the show, helps us keep doing what we do. Likewise, with Allison's eBay shop, where she has even more photography.
Yeah, if you search for the shop name Strange Familiars, it'll come up, and my username is Omi Wise, OmiWise.
So you kind of have your photography kind of split between both places. A good selection on eBay, good selection on Etsy, probably more on eBay, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's a big help as well. It all goes to support the show and keep us making new content for you. Thanks for listening, everybody. We will be back soon with more Strange Familiars. Strange Familiars is a production of Dark Holler Arts, music, books, art, podcasts, and more. Intro and background music is by Stone Breath. If you want to hear more or purchase music by Stone Breath, you can go to stonebreath.bandcamp.com. Strange Familiars is on Facebook, facebook.com/strangefamiliars, where you can join the Strange Familiars gathering group. We're on Instagram, @strangefamiliars, one word. Make sure to follow us on Instagram. And you can find us on the web at strangefamiliars.com.
Yeah. shroud.